This ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at cmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning again. Sorry for the delay. We're doing receiving the precept ceremony this morning in Jukai. And I was explaining that in our training, people, if they're drawn to the Dharma and the training here, they will begin practicing, will at some point, if they choose, enter into formal training, become a student, a training student. And then after at least a couple of years of active training, again, if they choose and request, this is all initiated by the student, they can request to receive the precepts, and they do this with their teacher. And during that period, they are studying the precepts, they're studying Dada Roshi's teachings on the precepts, they're studying with their teacher on the precepts, and then they come in for a week, such as this, where Sarah Sands, who is the recipient today, has been spending the week much in silence, sewing her raksu, her robe of liberation, and meeting with myself in this case, the teacher, to offer teachings and continue to develop understanding of the precepts. And so today is the formal ceremony of taking vows. And vows are, within the human world, perhaps one of the most important important aspects of our life. To take a vow means to really take a vow means that we have spent time reflecting and careful reflection, not just on the nature of our vow, but in a sense as a preliminary on what is important. What is important in this life for each of us to be, to do? How do we want to manifest ourselves in this life? What do we want to be giving? What is important to be receiving so that we can give? And so to get to the point where we're actually ready to take a vow takes a considerable sincere and dedicated process of inquiry and examination. Because in Buddhism, vows are understood as a very strong expression of intention, and intention is karma. So when we take a vow, we are creating something, we are setting something into motion that is more powerful than the moment before we've taken that vow, even with the same intention. In taking vow publicly, together with the community, something is made more real, more alive. Master Dogen said that it's the result of an inner alignment or conversion. Something is happening within us that is very personal and at the same time very universal, because it's something that people have been doing for a long, long time. And there's a reason why vows are so often, in a sense, perhaps primarily associated with religious or spiritual practice. Because there is something inherently spiritual about it, because it is at the heart of the questions of our life, our existence. And I was thinking during this week, and particularly this morning, what more important time is there than now to take vows, to reflect on what's important, to reflect on, because when we think about how do we want to live our life, we must also think about how have we lived our lives. If we think about how we want to direct our path forward, we must at the same time think about, well, what is the path that we have been walking? And to do that, and as I said, it's a very personal thing, and yet when we do it together, it becomes something larger. There's a kind of collaboration in it. And when we don't take vows, when we don't live a life based in that kind of examination and reflection and intention, it's not going to go well. Our lives are not going to go well. We will be subject to all of the forces we come into contact with, many of which we won't even be aware of. And being subject to them, we will respond to them internally and externally. We call that samsara. And at this time in our lives, in our country, and in our nation, in our world, we are in the midst of tremendously powerful forces that have everything to do with the path by which we arrived here, the things we have done, the things we have not done, the things we have understood, the things we have not understood. And we here means everyone within themselves, within our particular groups of identity. That also includes, those forces includes things we have been subjected to. And so taking a vow is both a very serious, not in the sense of severe, but in the sense of purposeful. And serious because it carries great implications. And if it didn't, then why would we bother? If a vow didn't have implications about what we're going to do with our life, then we shouldn't be doing it. And at the same time, it's very joyful. It's a celebration, because when anyone, anywhere, as a result of careful reflection and based in what is true and good about this life, establishes an intention within themselves, directs themselves in a particular direction, that's a cause of celebration. Because at that moment, they are turning themselves in the direction of humanity, of compassion, of wisdom, of wanting to contribute what is of benefit. And we need that. These teachings of the precepts, moral teachings, which exist in all traditions, but are very particular in Buddhism, because in Buddhism there is no... We are not relating consciously or as a tradition, although we may be individually, but we're not relating or centering the teachings around a God. In theistic religions, that's extremely important. That becomes an extremely important basis for the moral teachings, necessarily. Buddhism is similar and different in that the moral teachings are based in our own inherent wisdom, our own deep desire and impulse towards what is life-affirming. So in essence, they arise out of ourselves. So in that sense, we already know this. And the Buddha's radical, revolutionary realization that everything we do that arises from mind, which is everything, has a moral quality because it impacts ourselves and others, and that impact is primarily either beneficial or not. It's either helping, it's affirming life, it's bringing things together, it's an expression of the inherent unity of all things. It's unafraid of impermanence. It's unafraid of life and death. It steps courageously into all that is life and death, because it's based in contact, intimate contact with what is real, what is true. And so these in essence, very, very simple teachings, which anyone can understand, in any language, in any culture, of any age, really, as soon as language has developed, actually they could be understood before language. And yet, because they're based in such profound matters and questions of our very life and the reality that we are and that we live within, if we study these teachings, we will, I promise you, based on what I know so far, spend the rest of our lives examining them, being enlightened by them, being enlivened by them, being challenged by them. And so before we begin, and so I don't forget, I just want to acknowledge the friends of Sarah who are here with us this morning at a distance who could not be here in person and might be otherwise if we weren't at the time we are. So thank you for coming. And also, too, I just wanted to mention Kaishin, who one of our students who was so involved from a distance this week in helping Sarah with the sewing of her raksu. So these precepts are based, are an essential part of the teachings going back to the beginning, although they were phrased a little bit differently in the beginning in the Buddhist time. And they're part of the threefold training. So the sila, or the precepts, moral teachings, in the simplest form, getting our act together, right? To cease from harm, to practice good, and in order to do that, we have to examine our mind. We must. And so these precepts are an essential part of this threefold, three-part training. The precepts themselves are based in wisdom, prajna, that helps to come, it comes out of our concentration, our mindfulness, our meditation, our samadhi. They are selfless because they arise out of our realization that the self does not exist as an independent, solid, permanent entity. No characteristics, no part, no name, no description has those qualities of permanence, of autonomy, of independence. Nothing is separate in the real nature of things. That's what we realize through practice. That's what we call the absolute, the ultimate, the real. We live in a world in which our senses perceive things in their difference, in their distinction. And it's why we can look around and see the world in all of its sadness and all of its beauty, because we can see and recognize. And so in that selfless wisdom, we bring that forth into this world of differences where we discriminate one thing from another, and we manifest within the world of differences, but without discriminating in such a way that it divides and creates separation and creates suffering. And so these vows that Sarah will be taking this morning and that all of us are invited to take within ourselves are all about alleviating suffering. And so we'll begin with a series of vows. Now, normally we do three sets of vows to the lineage and then to the preceptor, in this case, myself, and then to our blood lineage, our family. I'd like to add another set of vows and begin with those. And these are the vows to the indigenous people of this place, the Munsee and the Mohican, the Muni-Kaniak peoples who inhabited this Mid-Hudson Valley area for thousands and thousands of years. The Mohican are known as the people of the waters that are never still. And to bow to them for their stewardship, for their love, for their belonging to this place for so many thousands of years before they were killed and driven out. And so then we, both in acknowledging them but also in occupying this place, have a grave responsibility to both work towards that repair of those tragedies, but also to steward this place. And so if you would come up here, or actually do it, you can do it from your seat, and bow to the mountain, because we'll also bow in bowing to them, we're also, these indigenous peoples, we're also bowing to the earth. And so to the mountain, and we'll all do the three bows with her, if we will, just in our seats. So now the Jishu will lead Sarah into the Buddha Hall, which is a hall opposite the Zendo where she'll do bows in the direction of her parents, who are both deceased. Normally, if a person's parents were alive and were able to be here, then they would bow to them in person. So now she will go and bow to her parents. And while this is happening, the altar, the main altar, will be closed and a new altar established here. And so in the Chukai ceremony, the teacher sits in the place of the Buddha. And to represent that continuation of these teachings being passed down since the time of the Buddha. And that's really important to understand and to appreciate, that the Buddhism is, although we have monasteries and various traditions and schools and institutions, the Buddhism is none of those things. Those things are all upaya. That Buddhism is what lives within each of us, the teachings, the Dharma, our aspirations, and that what keeps Buddhism alive is what happens between, within and between us. It's what happens within us as we practice, what's happened between us as we study with our teachers, and that there are various times in a person's training where something is communicated in a more obvious way from the teacher to the student, in this case today, the precepts, the Bodhisattva precepts. So next we'll do the invocation of the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, which are nothing but you yourself. They are the Buddha Shakyamuni. They are all enlightened masters, the Buddha treasure. The Dharma treasure is the teachings of the Buddha, but all wisdom teachings within the Buddha Dharma and also wherever they may appear. And also all things, because all things possess in full what the teachings teach, what they point to, what they are. And you yourself, and the Sangha treasure. This gathering here today, the larger Sangha, with our own Sangha practitioners everywhere, but also all beings, because everyone possesses Buddha nature. So we'll invoke, call into our presence the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I'll do this twice in Japanese and once in English. Everyone, please, Kasho. Namo jibo butsu namo jibo ho namo jibo so namo hachi shakyamuni butsu namo daizi dai hi kyu ku kanze om bo sa namo daijin fugen bo sa namo daishin manjushri bo sa namo koso joyo daishi namo to tai so josa daishi namo riki dai so shibo satsu. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyodaishi. Be one with Taiso Josadaishi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Namu Jibo Butsu Namu Jibo Ho Namu Jibo So Namu Hanshi Shakyamuni Butsu Namu Daizi Dai Hi Kyu Ku Kanze Om Bo Sa Namu Daijin Fugen Bo Sa Namu Daishin Manjushri Bo Sa Namu Koso Joyo Daishi Namu Taiso Josai Daishi Namu Riki Daiso Shi Bo Sa Tsu. Next, we'll do the Gatha of Atonement. And the Gatha of Atonement is comes out of the recognition that because of our human consciousness, we have desires. Those desires form into impulses. They appear in the mind in form of thoughts. We establish an intention. And that intention becomes an action, which is karma, that has consequence. And that the basis of those desires and intention can be what we call the afflictions, poison and greed, anger and delusion, pride and jealousy, all the things that cause suffering, or they can arise out of generosity, patience, loving kindness, magnanimity. And that makes all the difference. And so to when we come in into a new day, into a period of training, into the receiving of precepts, we want to come as free and clear as we can, as empty of all that we have accumulated. In order to do that, we have to see, we have to turn towards, and recognize, we have to take responsibility. We have to resolve, and resolution can mean many different things. And sometimes it's enough to do that internally. Many times we have to reach out. And so the Gatha of Atonement is a way of, it's a very powerful and necessary part of our training and practice to turn towards that all within ourselves, to take responsibility. Atonement is to take responsibility. And in doing that, we will see, we will discover, is there more that needs to be done? And then we can attend to that. And so we'll do this all together in call and response with the liturgist. Everyone, please, Kasha. You're in Choki. Holy Vokarm ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
I remember when I first started practicing many, many years ago and encountering the teachings, one of the things that struck me was how the teachings seemed unafraid. They seemed unafraid to turn towards, to give voice to meet all that I was afraid of. And there was both something refreshing and startling about that, and there was something frightening about that. And what I had yet to know, but was to find out as I began actually practicing, that when we turn towards, we come alive. The fears that we have of our insufficiency, of the overwhelm, are not proven to be true. But we only know when we take those courageous steps. Next, we'll do Shasui, which is a recognition of the pure, undefiled Buddha mind that exists within you and within each of us. And it's because of this Buddha mind that we can raise bodhicitta, that we can be in a world that seems to be moving only in one direction. We can see so many examples that seem to be based in certain views, and can, in the midst of all of that, have the thought that there must be another way. It's because of Buddha mind that that thought arises. It's because of our Buddha nature that we can begin to seek and turn towards or look for a path, and we can begin practicing and then realize that path. And so Shastri is a recognition of the mind that exists as one mind between the teacher and the student, between each of us and Buddha. And next we'll take refuge. So having invoked the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and that is the three treasures is Buddha Dharma. It is Buddhist practice, it is the path. If we are practicing the Buddha Dharma, even if we've never heard of the three treasures are present. And as I often say, when our practice is strong, when it's present there for us, when it's alive, it's because of we are taking refuge. When we stumble, when we waver, that is a time to take refuge. The more difficult things become, the more important, the more urgent, the more imperative it is to take refuge. Very often the impulse is to move away. As we feel ourselves moving away, in our mind, in our heart, in our energy, in our faith, in our motivation, as we begin to feel distant and move away, we're moving towards something else. We're not in a void. We're always moving towards something else. And very often that something else is born out of our own distracted mind. It's the forces that are at play. And sometimes the most difficult thing to do is to turn back and take refuge, particularly when it feels distant. It's easy when it's close. But when it's distant, and so the harder things become in our own personal lives, in the world, where we may feel lost and confused, where our faith is stumbling, where we feel uncertain about the Buddha, about the Dharma, about the Sangha, we take refuge. And in that, something happens. It's like a door stays open. And that's where the inexpressible aspect of this path and this life becomes alive. And we have to draw deep from within us in those moments. We can be inspired by the examples of others around us, and hopefully we will be. And that's why Sangha is so important. But each of us knows those times of insecurity and doubt, doubting ourselves, doubting what we had faith in before. That's why faith is so important. And so how to practice that when it seems absent is a kind of a miracle. It's a mystic path, right? We can talk about it, I can give words to it, but only you know. And so we take refuge. And again, we'll all do this together. Everyone's invited to take refuge. When I do it in Japanese, the word kie, namu kie, means to unreservedly rely upon. That much faith, that much courage. Sometimes that much desperation. And that, again, has to arise out of careful reflection. This is not a blindness. This is not a blind path. This is not a blind faith. You know what you're doing in the moment that you're doing it, even though you're standing on no ground at all. So, everyone, please, Gassho. Na. namu kiye butsu namu kiye ho namu kiye so kiye butsu mujo san kiye ho riji san kiye so wago san kiye bukyo kiye ho kyo kiye so kyo. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha. Namu kiye butsu namu kiye ho namu kiye so kiye butsu mujo san kiye ho riji san kiye so wago san kiye bukyo kiye ho kyo kiye so kyo. Will you maintain this?
I will.
You know, the importance in this Dharma of how each of us brings ourselves to each step along the way is cannot be overstated how important that is. Particularly within a training context where there is so much stuff, monasteries, robes, monks, altars, raksus, we get lost in things easily. Where we are strengthen so much and find so much support and so much that we need by practicing together, noble friends, by good examples, and that doesn't become a kind of herd mentality, just a going along. That's something we have to really keep guarding against. Within ourselves, within our community. It's basically the kiss of death to a true, genuine path. And so, all of this is that. So now we will continue with the three refuges are the first of the 16 Bodhisattva precepts. They are the totality. In a sense, the ceremony is complete. In essence, that's all we need. That's all there is. But in training, we can't see that. And so we need it to be expounded. We need it to be made we need fingers pointing so we can take it up in earnest and see that that is true. And so we continue then with the pure precepts. And pure precepts are, in essence, how an enlightened being lives in the world. It's how the Bodhisattva aspires, wakes up to each day. The first of the pure precepts is to not create evil. Not creating evil means evil here contains everything that causes harm, that injures, that denigrates, that disregards, that oppresses, that is not liberating, that does not awaken. And what this precept is telling us is that that only comes into being through creation. And this is a human affair. all the precepts are about human life, human activity. And so to not create that which disregards, denigrates, kills. This is the abiding place of all Buddhas. This is the very source of all Buddhas. Do not create evil. Will you maintain this?
I will. I vow not to create evil.
And you, sometimes you have a quiet voice, but sometimes you don't. So let's hear the other voice, okay? So everybody, so your friends at home can hold you accountable now.
Okay.
They heard you say it. Okay. The second of the pure precepts is to practice good. So too, good, that all that is good, all that is affirming, that is life-giving, that is liberating, that brings us into wakefulness, that calms the mind, that brings us together, arises from the mind, out of our intention. We don't know how powerful we are. And so practice good means bring that forward. Create that in your mind. Know how to do that. Know its source. See how it manifests. Know the difference between good and what is not good. And practice that. And this, as you see, has no object of practicing good. It's just practicing good. Be that throughout your whole body and mind. Master Dogen said, this is the Dharma of Samyak Sambodhi, perfect enlightenment. It's the way of all beings. Practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
The third pure precept is to actualize good for others. So to ensure that your practice of good has directly affecting people, creatures, two-leggeds, more-leggeds, non-leggeds, all of them. Actualize good for others so that our lives are having a direct and beneficial effect on others. This is to transcend the profane and be beyond the holy. This is to liberate oneself and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
The grave precepts that follow, the 10 grave precepts, are how they point to how we create harm. And in particular, because there are so many ways we can create harm, they point to the particularly human and universal ways that we, in all times and all places, cause the most amount of injury, create the most binding kind of karma. These are not all of the things that we do that cause harm, but they are the most serious, either because of the gravity or the egregiousness of one action, or because of the frequency of small actions that in that way build up to be very significant and impactful both upon ourselves and others. The first of the grave precepts is to affirm life. Do not kill. And this is based in the principle of non-harming. And recognizing that every creature we recognize as living, but all things, animate or inanimate, are alive, have life, are giving. And wherever they stand, they completely cover the ground upon which they stand. They fulfill their virtue. They manifest perfectly. And that it is not ours to take that away. To take that away. And so to not kill is also to not harbor the mind of taking that away, killing. To live in an affirmation of life. Master Dogen said, life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not kill life. Affirm life, do not kill. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life. I will not kill.
The second great precept is to be giving, to not steal. And this is really at the base of, there are two precepts here in the 10 great precepts that really point to the heart of magnanimity, which is the heart of the Buddha, that is a giving heart, wants to be in the world in a way that is giving rather than taking. And so this precept is about developing that mind which is based in non-grasping, non-clinging, non-attachment, which means that we don't seek our happiness, our ultimate happiness or contentment in things, in power and positions and titles, and recognize that when we, the moment that we have taken something and tried to possess it, we've already lost it. That when we liberate our mind from that mind of stealing, that mind of possession, everything is liberated. The mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?
I vow to be giving. I will not steal.
The third precept is to honor the body, to not misuse sexuality. In order to be on a path of liberation, we have to understand what we're working with. We have to understand the energies, the forces, inside and outside. We have to understand the way things work. And sexuality is a very powerful force within us. It's a powerful force in all living things. In spring, it's busting out all over. And it's a force that is generative at its heart, but because of our mind and consciousness and all the good that we are, but also all the confusion that we can be, sexuality can be a place of destruction and tremendous harm. It can also be the place of tremendous good and love. It can drive us apart. It can bring us together. And so to be cognizant of the power of that force, whether we're in an intimate relationship or not. We live in a culture that, in a sense, takes sexuality way too seriously and at the same time, not serious enough. And so to honor the body means to honor the whole person, intelligence, history, personality, emotions, intellect, humor, wit, all of it. The whole person, to not reduce anyone or anything to one thing. Dogen said, the three wheels, body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Honor the body, do not misuse sexuality. Will you maintain this?
I vow to honor the body. I will not misuse sexuality.
That precept really shows us, sometimes all too terribly, how the pursuit of sensual desire, without examination, without mindfulness, without understanding, can lead to so many unwanted and unintended consequences. The fourth great precept is to manifest truth, to not lie. And this is such an important precept, to want to live in what is true, to walk a path that is true. I mean, nobody wakes up and says, I want my aspirations to make my life a living lie, a living falsehood, right? And so the subtleties of the mind, of the ways we can be self-deceiving, other-deceiving, the ways we can rationalize that, this precept is really asking us to live in truthfulness, to trust that, and also to understand that these precepts are not rules. They're based in wisdom and compassion. And so sometimes to say what we believe to be true may have more negative impact than good. And so to honor this precept is to not tell the truth in that moment out of compassion and reverence for life, because it wouldn't serve. And that's a very important part of it. That's how these are not based in anything blind. They're not rules, they're living things. Dogen said, the Dharma wheel unceasingly turns and there's neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain and the essence and realize the truth. Manifest truth, do not lie. Will you maintain this?
I vow to manifest truth. I will not lie.
You know, as we consider these precepts, we can understand why it's so important that we have the Gatha of Atonement. Right? Because we will trespass against our vows. We will transgress against our vows. We do not set out to do that. Again, these vows must be taken seriously. We must be sincere. but we are also each in our own place on the path. We are still subject to these energies and forces within and without. None of us are yet completely clear. None of us yet are completely free. And so even within these vows, when we forget them, move against them, we have to learn how to return and realize that we can do that and how powerful that is. And let each other do that too. The fifth great precept is to proceed clearly, to not cloud the mind. When we encounter the true self, when we encounter Buddha mind, then to cloud the mind is no longer desirable. It's no longer pleasurable. It hurts. It's painful. That's why the more we practice, the more, in a sense, sensitive we become. The world pours in. We realize it's always been pouring in. Everything that is inside rises up. We realize it's always been rising up. And so it becomes even more important. And so when we're no longer seeking to turn away, to escape, to dim, or to fog, there's just this bright, clear, radiant, boundless Buddha mind. Dogen said, "This mind is the original, pure, and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not let it be defiled. Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind." We maintain this.
I vow to proceed clearly. I will not cloud the mind.
And it takes time to see this. I mean, you know, for a long time, our distractions are still entertaining. That's why we have them. And so they give us that pleasure, that satisfaction that we seek, rightly. But they don't give it to us rightly. And so that's where having faith, really being earnest and practicing well, we begin to see, right? Because we need to see that there is something else, right? In order to be able to wean ourselves away and begin to let go of what we have taken to be aliveness, pleasure. The sixth great precept is to see the perfection, to not speak of others' errors and faults. The Buddha said that there were four forms of deluded speech: false speech, being truthful; harsh speech, so we could think of this as harsh speech, when we speak of others' errors and faults, that we're speaking harshly about them. Now, we all need to, at times, speak critically of others and ourselves. And so what this precept is saying is do that only for the benefit of others. Don't do that seeking enjoyment. Don't get or derive any pleasure from that. Only do it to help others and realize that within ourselves and others, there are short Buddhas and tall Buddhas, fast ones and slow ones, bright ones and dull ones. They're all Buddhas. And so to attach to any characteristic is to turn against this precept. Dogen said, in the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. See the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Will you maintain this?
I vow to see the perfection. I will not speak of others' errors and faults.
And again, that's why the Mahayana perspective, out of compassion and reverence for life, because some people attach to this precept as a rule and so are reluctant to say anything about anything that is critical, which is basically to sanction all that is wrong, all that should change. The next precept, to realize self and other as one, to not elevate the self and blame others. We could see this as divisive speech, another form of speech the Buddha spoke about, where we want to divide, and in that division establish high and low, deserving and undeserving, worthy and unworthy. This is the basis of all oppression. This is the essence of white supremacy, of male dominance, of all forms of homophobia, of all forms of divisiveness, that at their base are a form of aggression and violence. When there is no self-clinging, when we're no longer We're no longer seeking or are raised up by praise. We're no longer afraid of nor crushed by blame or criticism. Then we can perceive clearly, we can hear clearly, we can learn, we can see others more clearly. Dogen said, Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and realize the whole earth, your nature, my nature. When the great body is manifested, there is no outside or inside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's not a square inch of earth upon which to stand. That's where we all abide. Realize self and other as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to realize the self and other as one, and not to raise the self and blame others.
These precepts also really help us to be humble. The eighth grade precept is to give generously, to not be withholding. One phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 glasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors. This is Master Dogen. Since the beginning, there never has been anything to withhold. Recognize that you always have something you can offer. Do not withhold that if it might help another. Give generously, do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously. I will not be withholding.
The ninth precept is to actualize harmony. Do not be angry. And as we spoke about, this does not mean you cannot be angry. But how do you practice anger when it arises? So it's based in compassion. Within, when we are angry. In other words, how can you be angry skillfully? When our anger leads us to want to hurt, to destroy, that is not skillful anger. When it leads us to want to unify, to heal, to repair, that can be skillful, and it's anger. And the difference is that it's not about oneself. It's not based in selfishness. It is not regressing. It is not advancing. It is not real. It is not unreal. There's an illuminated cloud ocean. There's an ornamented cloud ocean. Actualize harmony. Do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony. I will not be angry.
And then the 10th grade precept is to experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. Having taken refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, this precept is saying, do not step apart. Do not turn against, which almost always happens when we are struggling, when we're doubting, when we're insecure, when we're in pain. We look for something to blame. And this is saying, when we're struggling, stay within. Stay within our vow, within our commitment. Take refuge. Start over. Begin again. Dogen said, living the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the heart of wisdom and compassion. Every virtue returns to the ocean of reality. You should not comment on these precepts. Just practice them, realize them, and actualize them. Experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
These 16 precepts, the three refuges, the three pure precepts, and the 10 grave precepts were handed down by the Buddha to my teacher, to me, and now I hand them to you. Generation after generation, they have come down in this way. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you truly maintain them well?
I will.
So, robe of liberation. This is the lineage of the ancestors from the Buddha down to this time. Mountains and Rivers Order. This is to certify that Sarah Sands, having fulfilled the precepts, training requirements of the Mountain Monastery and the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 14th day of June, 2020, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Taisho. Now, everyone please Gosho.
sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the Great Enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. So now let me say a little bit about your name. So these names are derived from Chinese characters. And so, as I spoke with you earlier yesterday, you arrive with a clean new name, and now you give it life with your practice. So Tai means body. It also means the real thing. And so there is the physical body. There is the Dharma body, the body of reality. They are not two. There is the body of characteristics, of appearances, that is born, that ages, that dies, and there's the body that is unborn and undying. They are never apart. Within this physical body, we practice sensations, emotions, feelings, and in that, we are meeting the Dharma body on the ground of reality. In our non-grasping, we begin to encounter this Dharma body, this Tai, one nature, one formless essence, so that we can live within the karmic body, the physical body, freely. Sho means to illuminate, to shine. It's like moonlight. It's a very particular kind of light. It pervades everywhere. But it's different from the sunlight. Both are illuminating. Moonlight is soft, gentle, and yet powerful. Sho is the character in the Heart Sutra. Avalokiteshvara clearly saw the emptiness of the five conditions, clearly saw this is the illumination of Sho. This body, Sho Tai, or Tai Sho, is radiant, it's complete, it reaches everywhere. Master Yunmen said, within this mountain of form, Tai, is a light, Sho. When you look, you can't see it. So you must look without using your physical eyes. You must look until you go blind, until there's only Tai Sho. This radiant, illuminated body is a body of you and every living thing. To see beyond seeing, to look beyond looking, when you altogether forget, this is Tai Sho. So in receiving these precepts, as I spoke about yesterday, something continues and something begins anew. That to take vows, do this within the community of, with your Sangha, with your friends, means that we have all been a witness to this, and now we hold each other in these vows. And so I hope that these vows are alive for you now and will continue to be, and that you will be generous with them and give them away through your own life, your big life, and let it be big. Bountiful. That is the bodhisattva path, right? To live for the well-being of others includes every bit of you, Tai, but is illuminated in the 10 directions. Sho. May your life go well.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the monastery store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.